today really is a culmination of a lifelong calling to serve God. It means a fulfillment of a long journey, a journey of yearning, a journey of hope, a journey of feeling called to the priesthood.
That we are taking a pioneering step for the whole church forward to give hope to Catholics out there who want an inclusive gospel church modeled on Jesus Christ.
Those are about three of the ladies who were ordained in Pennsylvania yesterday as, they say, Roman Catholic priests. They were ordained by, they say, female Roman Catholic bishops who were in turn ordained by several male bishops here in America who have yet to disclose their identities. We're going to be talking about the alleged ordination yesterday in Pittsburgh of a dozen female priests in the Roman Catholic Church here in the first half hour of Issues, Etc. Dr. James Hitchcock will be joining us momentarily from St. Louis University to sort some of this out for us. Are they really priests, priestesses, priestettes? I'm not quite sure what to call them. Dr. James Hitchcock will tell us whether or not this kind of thing can fly, even in American Catholicism. At 3:30 here on Issues, Etc., we're going to do a little audio open lines. We'll start with an ABC News report on the newest details about Mel Gibson's arrest and what's followed afterward. CBS Early Show also has a story on the boredoms and the tedious nature of motherhood. They found a number of women who just think it's boring to be mothers, and we'll get your reaction to that during audio open lines. At 3:30, we've got an interest. I'm sorry, 4 o'clock, we've got an interesting conversation with the president of Concerned Women for America, Wendy Wright. The FDA has made a decision to ease access to Plan B, the so-called morning after pill. We'll get her reaction to that, and then we'll pick up again with some audio open lines from 4:30 until 5. We've got a little bit from Hannity and Combs, a segment on a new film that is really causing a controversy. It's a film on radical Islam called Obsession, and a CNN piece on Tony Blair's support for embryonic stem cell research. Of course, British Prime Minister Tony Blair is in the U.S. now, and of course this story has to do with what they're doing in Great Britain when it comes to embryonic stem cell research. And then from 5 to 6, yesterday we heard a piece during audio open lines. When some Christians look at what's happening in the Middle East, they say this is the beginning of the end. This is the beginning, laying the groundwork for the great battle of Armageddon and the return of Jesus Christ. But something's got to happen first, according to many of those Christians, and that's the so-called secret rapture. We'll talk with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller about the secret rapture and how it figures into Left Behind theology in the last hour of Issues, Etc. today. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're going to talk here in the first half hour about the alleged ordination yesterday in Pittsburgh of a dozen female priests in the Roman Catholic Church with Dr. James Hitchcock. Before we talk to Dr. Hitchcock, let's listen to a live report from last night. WTAE in Pittsburgh on this alleged ordination of a dozen female priests.
They chose Pittsburgh's Three Rivers for their ordination ceremony this afternoon because of what the word water symbolizes in Scripture. They say holiness and purity. Channel 4 Action News reporter Jen Famiglia is live right now for the anointment on the water. Jen.
That's right, Mike. We're live on the Gateway Clipper Fleet's Majestic. We are cruising along the Allegheny River, so if you see some breakup in our signal, you'll understand why. Right now, you should know that seven women are being ordained as priests today, four as deacon. I want you to take a look right now. They're being ordained by three female bishops who claim they were ordained by three male bishops in good standing with the Catholic Church. They say it happened in a secret ceremony, and the names of those bishops will only be revealed after their death for fear of excommunication. And that's exactly what these women face, you can see right now. They're at risk. They are willing to take it to fulfill what they say is their calling. Right now, this ceremony has been going on since about 4 o'clock, and this part is called the laying of the hands on the candidates. All the folks on the boat were invited to step down to the main platform here and silently give their blessing to each of the seven women who are going to be ordained today.
That was the story yesterday from WTAE in Pittsburgh about the ordination of a dozen females to either the priesthood or the deaconesshood in the Roman Catholic Church. Dr. James Hitchcock joins us to talk about this. He's professor of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, first of all, are these valid ordinations, given the fact that we just learned in that story that some duly ordained male bishops secretly ordained the women who performed the ordinations yesterday in Pittsburgh?
No, they're not. First of all, if it is true that these so-called women bishops got ordained by male bishops in good standing, the Catholic Church teaches that a woman cannot be ordained. And by that, they don't mean simply should not be or may not be, but they mean that the ordination would be invalid. So it really makes no difference if they say that they were ordained by some bishops who are actually in good standing.
What do you make of that, the alleged story of the secret ceremony whereby several Roman Catholic bishops did ordain women to be bishops in their stead?
Right. There have been rumors for some years that one or two bishops had conceivably moved in that direction, but I don't know that I would put too much credibility in the rumors. Also bear in mind that the Catholic Church recognizes in general the validity of Eastern Orthodox orders. And Eastern Orthodoxy, as you know, is, while it has its major branches like Russian, Greek, etc., has innumerable small splinter groups. And sometimes you'll find that somebody who's dissatisfied with the way the Catholic Church is going goes and gets himself ordained by one of these splinter Eastern Orthodox bishops. And then, in the eyes of the Catholic Church, he is presumably genuinely a priest, but not in good standing. So it's also possible that those are the kind of bishops that they're talking about.
So what should happen here now that these events have taken place? One would presume that it's very likely one of these women calling herself a priest in the Roman Catholic Church would find a congregation who is willing to have her serve as priest. What should happen?
Well, these people are essentially automatically excommunicated. That point was made, I believe, by a spokesman for the Diocese of Pittsburgh. If there is such a group, and I don't doubt there may be some who feel that way, they have essentially said, you know, we don't really care whether they're Catholics, because after all, if the Catholic Church says no, this woman is not a priest, she cannot say Mass, she cannot hear confessions, and you go to her anyway, then you have decided, really, that you don't want to be a Catholic. And it's just, you know, use of the name Catholic in what is essentially a meaningless situation.
Is this a problem unique to the Pittsburgh diocese where these things took place, or is the problem here a little more nationwide when it comes to American Roman Catholicism?
I don't think it's a widespread problem in the sense of having large numbers of people involved. I think it's a very small number of people, but they do come from various places. I know there was one from Boston. There was one from Milwaukee. I forget where else some of them were from, Philadelphia, I think. I think the total number is very small. One of the interesting part of it, though, to me, is the fact that several of them who did this had actually been employed by the church. And I would say that the local bishop in that case had not exercised sufficient amount of diligence to learn something about the people that he was hiring for responsible positions, if they are people who essentially reject the whole Catholic idea of hierarchy and sacrament. The best analogy here, I think, would be that of homosexual marriages, you know, where people may go through these ceremonies and say, okay, now we're married, but the state does not recognize homosexual marriage, except, I guess, in Vermont, and the church certainly does not. So it's essentially done to make a statement and not to actually achieve anything.
Your response to a quote from Patricia Friesen in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch Nation section yesterday, an Associated Press story in advance of these ordinations that took place, Patricia Friesen says, "We need to claim the right for women, their equal right with men to be ordained. We need to do this contra legem, that is, against the law, to break an unjust law, and yet to remain firmly within the church." Can that actually be the case?
Yeah, well, that phrase, firmly within the church, seems to me to be a meaningless phrase. What they mean by that, apparently, is we define the church. We decide who is or who is not in the church. We have decided we are in the church. It doesn't matter what the Pope thinks. It doesn't matter what our bishops think. It's, you know, do-it-yourself Catholicism. So I find that phrase, firmly within the church, to be completely meaningless.
In that connection, then, Joan Hook is also quoted extensively in the story from yesterday, St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He says, I do not intend to start a church of my own. I will not lead people away from the Catholic Church, but rather I hope to lead people to the church. Your reaction, Dr. Hitchcock.
Well, as you suggested earlier, if she in fact does find a congregation, then she is leading people away from their parishes. She is telling them, in effect, your bishop doesn't know what he's talking about. Your pope doesn't know what he's talking about. I am a reliable spiritual guide. Listen to me. I don't see how she can then claim that she is leading people into the Catholic Church. The whole thing, of course, is posited on the idea that, well, maybe not soon, but sometime down the road, what we've done will be recognized and validated. And the official teaching of the Catholic Church is that that just will never happen. And so these people, I think, have just basically put themselves outside the church.
According to the AP, in 2002 in Austria, there were seven women who were also allegedly ordained to the priesthood in the Roman Catholic Church. They were excommunicated by the Vatican in 2003. Does this latest round of ordinations call for a Vatican response?
I suspect it will. But as I said, as the spokesman, I believe, for the Diocese of Pittsburgh said, well, they have automatically excommunicated themselves. There are two issues here, again, whether it's permitted to be done or whether it, in fact, can be done. And there is a group sometimes called Lefebvreists of very, very conservative Catholics who rejected the Second Vatican Council and led by a French archbishop named Lefebvre. Some years back, he went ahead and consecrated some bishops without the approval of the Vatican, whereupon he was automatically excommunicated. Those bishops are presumably real bishops, but they're not supposed to be exercising their authority. So anytime anybody goes ahead with an irregular ordination of this kind, there is really an automatic excommunication that kicks in at that point.
Why does, with so many mainline Protestant denominations, especially in the U.S., ordaining women, you could run through the alphabet soup of Protestant denominations that ordain women, including non-denominational churches. Most people wouldn't even bat an eye to see a woman either in a collar or at the front of a church leading a service. Why does the Roman Catholic Church take this issue so very seriously, Dr. Hitchcock?
There are a number of factors here. One is the fact that Jesus did not call a woman to be among his apostles. The Catholic Church teaches that the bishops are the successors of the apostles. There's also a complicated theological issue here in which the sacramental role of the priest, who is regarded as representing Christ, and that he represents Christ to the church, and that the maleness of Christ is not accidental or unimportant, and that therefore Christ is represented symbolically and sacramentally by a male.
I've always been fascinated by, and I believe that I'm at least paraphrasing accurately, the rationale that was put forth by Pope John Paul II during his tenure when it came to the ordination of female priests. And perhaps I heard it from you, Dr. Hitchcock, or from someone else in this connection, that JP2's response was, look, the church has never been authorized to do such a thing. The church simply, even if it wanted to, has no authority to ordain female priests.
Yes, exactly. The difference, again, between may and can't. The church is not only saying you may not do this, but it's saying you can't do it. Again, it's like homosexual marriage. You can call it a marriage you want, but it's not a marriage. It's ironic, again, that people who will be highly critical of papal authority and say, oh, the Pope's claiming way too much authority for himself, when something like this comes along, they basically say he can do anything he wants. he can change the nature of the priesthood. And many of those same people would probably also urge him to change the nature of marriage and admit homosexual marriage. So it's a kind of an odd contradiction. My own feeling about this particular incident and the one in Austria earlier, I think there was also one in Canada, is a publicity for the most part. The movement is not really going anywhere, the movement for women priests, so every once in a while you pump it up and you get your 15 minutes of fame, and I don't see how it's going to accomplish anything else other than that.
We're talking with Dr. James Hitchcock, professor of history at St. Louis University, about the alleged ordination yesterday in Pittsburgh of a dozen female priests in the Roman Catholic Church. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You're listening to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We also have an in-studio email address. It's issuesetc@kfuo.org. In about 15 minutes, audio open lines will begin with an ABC News report on the newest details regarding Mel Gibson's arrest. Dr. Hitchcock, couple-related issues here. Some have argued that female ordination is an inevitability, given the fact that there is such a shortage of priests in the Catholic Church.
Right.
How do you respond?
Well, from a practical standpoint, of course, that would be obviously a solution. But, of course, the Church cannot allow itself ultimately to be governed by purely pragmatic considerations. It has to be governed by what it perceives to be the truth. The Church could ordain married men, or it could allow, and has ordained some, or it could allow priests to marry. If the situation became really desperate with regard to priests, I suspect that might happen. But the teaching of the Church is very clear in saying simply women cannot be ordained. It's not just a rule. They see it as representing the will of God.
Well, that was my next question, though they have also argued, well, celibacy is a discipline that the Church practices voluntarily, that the priesthood takes upon itself voluntarily, and so is this exclusion of women from the priesthood. It's just something that we've done voluntarily. It's time for that to stop. You're saying there's no one-for-one comparison here with celibacy.
Yes, exactly. That's the clear teaching of the Church, going back to what you quoted John Paul II as saying, we have no authority to do this. Nobody doubts at all that there have been married priests in the history of the Church, and I say there are some now, but there's no evidence. Some feminists try to claim that there were women priests and bishops in the early Church, but there's no persuasive evidence of it. The only references we find to it in the early centuries are, in fact, two groups that are clearly deemed heretical. The fact that they have women in leadership positions in these early centuries is cited by bishops and others as further evidence of how they have broken away from the true gospel.
Do you have the details on that, just as a matter of history, what groups in the history of the Church have strayed into female ordination from time to time?
Well, in later centuries, of course, since the 16th century, there have been any number of them. But in the early centuries, it was, broadly speaking, the people we call the Gnostics, who really regarded sexuality. They rejected the flesh. The flesh was evil, and therefore they regarded sexuality as not only of no importance, but something to be essentially, again, rejected. So women, men, it really made no difference. Those were not real distinctions in their minds. They were also people who, in a certain sense, they defined their religion by their own imaginations. You could let yourself, let your imagination have free rein, and whatever was spiritually meaningful to you then became real. So they weren't even interested particularly in the historical facts of Jesus' life on earth. They tended to approach the Bible in a kind of a metaphorical or allegorical way. Those are the group. We don't know a whole lot about it because it's mentioned primarily, again, by bishops who are condemning it. But we do know that it did exist in some of these groups.
So as a matter of history, up over against the claims of the feminists within the Roman Catholic Church, as a matter of history, no Orthodox Catholic communion has ever had a female priesthood.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. The closest piece of evidence that they have been able to come up with is that there are some tomb references in some cases to a woman that's phrased in such a way that it sounds like she might be a priest or a bishop, but it's been pointed out by other scholars that the custom in those early centuries, when we did have married clergy, was to give honorably to the wife the same title that her husband possessed. So if her husband, for example, was a magistrate, she would be referred to with the same honorable title. They still have that custom, I understand, in France, for example, where a general's wife is referred to as la générale. with the female pronoun. So I think most scholars think that these apparent references to female clergy have to do with basically with clergy's wives.
Okay, you have mentioned several times here, Dr. Hitchcock, that both in the eyes of the Pittsburgh diocese and ultimately in the eyes of the Vatican, it's likely that these women who have claimed ordination for themselves and the priesthood for themselves are automatically excommunicated. Let's talk a little bit about that arrangement. Is it, strictly speaking, a self-exclusion that has taken place here without any official recognition or needed on the part of the Vatican or the diocese?
I think technically, yes, but I imagine there will be some official statement forthcoming. There, again, already has by the Diocese of Pittsburgh, because there are certain things which are stated in canon law. If you do this, you are automatically excommunicated. And one of them is to participate in what is here regarded as a schismatic ordination ceremony. That is to say, a ceremony of ordination not authorized by church officials. So, if it were done secretly, for example, and the Vatican didn't find out about it and didn't issue a decree of excommunication, the people who did it would be still automatically excommunicated because they had violated this principle.
So anyone who would, from this point on, after these alleged ordinations in Pittsburgh, who would permit one of these women to act as priest or celebrant in their church, or who would recognize these ordinations in any way, be they an official or someone else, would also be considered self-excluded.
That's correct. I don't think we're going to see any established parish, even the most liberal, inviting one of these women in and saying, yeah, come on in here and celebrate Sunday Mass for us, because I think even the most liberal bishop would be forced to act in that case, and then the pastor himself, the male pastor, would be disciplined and excommunicated. So I don't even think we'll see that. In another sense, in self-excommunication again, because after all, if one of these newly ordained women, so-called, has set up a little congregation for herself and claims that she's celebrating Mass on Sunday and tells people, well, come here, don't go to your parish church, well, that is, in a sense, excommunication. You know, she's cutting herself off from the Catholic sacraments and offering an alternative sacramental system, which is not Catholic.
Dr. James Hitchcock is a regular guest. He's professor of history at St. Louis University. Dr. Hitchcock, it's always a pleasure, and thank you for being our guest.
Yeah, it seems like it's always a rather unpleasant subject that I talk about.
Well, but you are a very good resource for us and a reasoned voice, so that's why we always come to you. So thank you again.
Well, thank you, Mark.
All right, when we come back from this break, we're going to do a little audio open lines. We're going to start out with the latest details on Mel Gibson's arrest. This is a nasty affair, and Mel Gibson is doing his very best, it seems, to try and smooth the waters. I doubt that they will be smoothed any time very soon, but we'll get the latest from ABC News on Mel Gibson's arrest, his apology. He, I believe, has gone into rehab. We'll see what is going on. And that's audio open lines. When we come back, a little bit more as well. Stay tuned.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Many Christians understand the theological impact of 16th century Christian reformer Martin Luther. Fewer understand Luther's lasting impact on the world of politics and of thought. Our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August is an overview of Luther's life, thought, and work. It's called Luther's World of Thought. You can find this book at our website, issuesetc.org. It's right on the homepage. Or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and find out more about Luther's World of Thought, our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. This hardback book is $29.99 plus shipping and handling. Our website address again, issuesetc.org, and the number for Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
Partial birth abortion is back before the Supreme Court.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
This summer, the Supreme Court accepted two cases testing the constitutionality of a federal law banning partial birth abortion. Two federal appeals courts threw out the Partial Birth Abortion Act of 2003 as unconstitutional because it did not provide a health exception to pregnant women facing a medical emergency. The health exception demanded by pro-abortion proponents is a straw man. The American Medical Association has stated that a partial birth abortion is never needed to protect the health of a woman. Let's pray the High Court gives medical facts more weight than political double talk.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. You have one new voicemail. So I punch P to play the new voicemail. Hi, Dale. This is Fred, or Sally, or whoever. Sorry I didn't catch you. What I'm calling about is such and such. And Fred, or Sally, or whoever, goes on and on telling you about such and such. And then, more often than not, it ends this way. You can reach me at 618-555-7145 or my cell phone 314-555-2076. Huh? You said it so quickly that I can only get a couple numbers. So you go back and listen to the same message again. Hi, Dale, da-da-da-da. And this time you get a few more numbers, but still not enough to return the phone call. Hi, Dale, this is Fred or Sally or whoever, and now you're listening for the third time. It's like the movie Groundhog Day. Same thing over and over and over again. It's maddening. Just because you have said it doesn't mean I have understood it. Oral communication is more than just making your point. That works in print, where a reader can pause. But successful oral communication needs slowness and repetition. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Matthew 7, verse 12. That might help communication in many areas of your life, not just those confounded voicemails. I'm Dale Meyer, and thanks for giving me your phone number slowly.
Do you want more of God's grace? Village Lutheran Church in Ladue is a Bible-believing church faithful to the Scriptures, a place for the whole family, a community that cares with a vibrant, historic Christian liturgy. Village Lutheran Church is located at 9237 Clayton Road in Ladue. www.villagelutheranchurch.org. Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, 314-993-1834. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Here in this half hour, audio open lines. I don't know if we're going to be able to pack this in, but we're going to do our very best to do so. We're going to start out with a little Mel Gibson. Of course, the big story was he was arrested. Actually, that's not big of a story if you're a celebrity. Celebrities get arrested all the time. And they get arrested for DUI. But the real story here, of course, is the supposed anti-Semitic epithets he was uttering during his drunken state and during his arrest. And the question of whether or not the sheriff's department covered it up. We'll get the details on that coming up here in just a moment from ABC News. And then here during Audio Open Lines, there's a new movie out called Obsession. It deals with radical Islam. Hannity and Combs from Fox News had a segment on this new movie. We'll play that for you and get your reaction. And finally, Tony Blair is here in the United States for a number of reasons. Of course, that occasions a story from CNN on the support for embryonic stem cell research in Great Britain by Tony Blair and the allies that he finds over here in the United States on that issue. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address during audio open lines, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We've got a new book of the month because, after all, today is a new month, even here on Issues Etc., where time stands still. Sometimes it's August, the 1st of August. The new book is called Luther's World of Thought. It explores Luther's thinking beyond his theology without leaving his theology behind. It's a great book, and if you're looking for one more book in your summer reading list, add this one, our Issues Etc., Book of the Month for August, Luther's World of Thought. It's a hardback book, $29.99 plus shipping and handling. See more at our website, issuesetc.org, or order the book by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The book is called Luther's World of Thought. It's our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August. Well, Mel Gibson ran afoul of the law, and now he's running afoul of some rather influential Jewish rights groups, and he's managed to offend just about everybody. Here's a story from ABC News, the latest details on Gibson's arrest.
The latest on Mel Gibson. The tabloids are showing these pictures from In Touch magazine. I think actually that's the New York Post they're showing. Oh, no, the New York Post is showing these pictures from In Touch magazine. These are pictures of the night of his arrest. Now, on Monday, Gibson's spokesman said the actor-director is now in treatment. This comes as the deputy who arrested Gibson speaks out about what happened. And amid new revelations about the police's handling of the case, once they learned that Gibson screamed anti-Semitic remarks, ABC's Miguel Marquez reports.
Mel Gibson smiled for his mugshot the morning he was booked for drunk driving. The deputy who made the arrest, James Mee, is finally speaking out. Mee, who wrote in his original report that Gibson went on an anti-Semitic tirade, is himself Jewish. Mee said he didn't take Gibson seriously as he was being verbally assaulted, although in his original report, Mee wrote that he felt, quote, threatened by Gibson.
Everything that is in the report, in the actual report, will be given to the district attorney's office.
Sources tell ABC News Mee was instructed to rewrite his original report, leaving all the inflammatory material out, and to put that in a supplemental report to keep it out of public view. Still, Gibson's problems are growing. In a rare public move, Hollywood super agent Ari Emanuel urged others to stop working with Gibson, even if it means a sacrifice to their bottom line. Already, ABC has canceled a planned television project with Gibson's Icon production company on the Holocaust. But the Walt Disney Company is still going ahead with distribution of Gibson's newest film, Apocalypto, due out in December. Still, Gibson's legal problems may complicate its launch.
The one person they had to front for that movie is Mel Gibson to go out and do promotion and publicity for the film.
Gibson has apologized profusely, and the Hollywood megastar is now undergoing treatment for what he called a horrific relapse. The case is now in the hands of the Los Angeles County District Attorney. Formal charges could be filed later today. For Good Morning America, Miguel Marquez, ABC News, Hollywood.
Well, I guess we'll see how far a public apology and the mea culpas will go in Hollywood when it comes to Mel Gibson. You know, this is a guy, I said this yesterday, and I think I still stand by it. This is a guy who really bought himself a world of trouble when he made his little movie a couple years ago called The Passion of the Christ. He depicted a more or less New Testament version of the events. There were a few variations, but not many. And according to that New Testament reading, yes, the Jewish leaders of Jesus' day did have a hand in Jesus' trial, crucifixion, and death. And I think that's where this began, but that, of course, is no excuse for his behavior. I want to hear from you on the arrest of Mel Gibson. How disappointed are you, a man who made what some have argued the best depiction of Christ's last hours and his resurrection, relapsing into alcoholism and then, apparently according to the reports, going on an anti-Semitic tirade while he was being arrested? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. We get that email right here in the studio and we can respond to it right here during audio open lines. issuesetc@kfuo.org. Well, on the other side of this apparent worldwide divide, there's a new film out. I had not heard about this. I'd seen little blurbs, but I didn't know what I was looking at. The film is called Obsession, and as far as I can tell from the press on this film, it deals with the most radical of Islam. It deals with Islam's hatred of the West, of the U.S., of Israel, of Jews, and of Christians, and it shows it primarily by, and I don't know if this is a documentary, it looks like a documentary, it shows it primarily by simply culling footage from Arab and Islamic television. We're going to hear about that in just a minute here. A segment of Hannity and Combs talked to the director and to someone else about this film Obsession. First, let's go to the phones. Charlie's listening in Hamel. Hi, Charlie.
Hello.
Hi.
I got into an interesting conversation with some people yesterday about this very thing, and it struck me that when a Christian gets arrested or, you know, is exposed to be what they are, a sinner, we always forget when they are a Christian what Luther says about the Eighth Commandment, and that is that unless we are the one who is given to judge this person and to convict them of their sin, we should say nothing, and in fact, if we do say anything, do everything we can to defend their reputation. Mel Gibson is a devout Roman Catholic. He has a priest. That priest, I'm sure, will be talking to him, and it seems, as far as I can see, that Mel Gibson is very penitent and that he is going to be probably confessing to his priest, receiving holy absolution. And as far as we're concerned, as other Christians, that should be the end of it for us.
Well, what about the issue that, of course, totally against our control, and we're speaking here generally, Charlie, totally against our control, the story of his anti-Semitic remarks, apparently true, is kind of the center of this whole story, not so much his arrest or his relapse into alcoholism, but the things he said while being arrested. Do you think there's a need for Christians to say, in effect, what many have been saying, and that is, well, look, we don't know what to say about Gibson himself, but if what he said, he actually said, we want no part of that.
I would say that that's fair. But the thing that we mustn't forget is that we need to always be concerned when we're talking about him in particular with what is best for him spiritually. And we should pray for him and be thankful that he is a Christian and will be hearing the gospel from his priest.
Well, absolutely. I'm glad you bring that up. I assume that this same way of dealing with the issue would prevail whether Gibson were a Christian or not a Christian. I wonder. I think so. Thank you very much for the call, Charlie. What about the rest of you? Your reaction to Mel Gibson's arrest? Now, see, the heart of Luther's thought on how you deal with the sin of your brother is summed up in these two words that I think they're probably original to Luther. At least they come down to us in English this way, putting the best construction on their behavior, even when their behavior is manifest sin. Now, does that mean we say it didn't happen? No. Does that mean we somehow condone it? No. Sometimes the best construction is still pretty bad. Let's just take the case of not Mel Gibson, but going in the Wayback Machine for a few minutes, Jimmy Swaggart. What did he do? He solicited a prostitute? Is that what happened? By his own admission, he solicited a prostitute. How do you put the best construction on this? Sometimes the best construction is to simply say what he did was wrong. He solicited a prostitute. And in the case of Mel Gibson, the best construction one can put on it, and this is, you don't fly the flags and shoot off the fireworks, you simply say what Mel Gibson did, driving drunk, was illegal and wrong. 84 and a 45, if I did that, I would hope someone would tell me it's illegal. And if he said what he is reported to have said during his arrest, that too is wrong. And that can be, in some cases, the best construction you put on it, to call sin, sin. Now, does that mean we go on to talk about whether he's an anti-Semite? No, because that is not putting the best construction on it. He might have said things in his drunken state, or his anger, or his frustration, or his fear, or whatever, that he does not actually believe. We don't know that. Well, Hannity and Combs had a piece on a new film, It's Hard to Put the Best Construction on Some of This, drawn from the film of Arab television around the world. The film is called Obsession. It has to do with radical Islam. Here's the piece.
That was from the new movie Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West. Using images from Arab TV, rarely seen here in America, the film argues that the threat of radical Islam is real and is right here at home. Joining us now is Nani Darwish, who was interviewed in the film, along with director Wayne Copping, who joins us on the phone. And Nani, let me start with you. What produces terrorism?
Hatred, indoctrination, and repeating the same thing over and over again. Jews are apes and pigs. They are infidels. They are enemies of God. And that's what we grew up with for many, all the time. And the movie, Obsession, the movie, has shown that and proved it from footage from the Middle East.
Right. You know, it's truly remarkable, some of the footage you have in here. And I guess, Wayne, the question that we debate here every night is, do you meet that hatred with military force? Is that the way to eradicate it? Is that the best way to deal with it?
You know, it's not a military struggle. It's not a political struggle. This is an ideological struggle. And it's something that, when we talk about reform and dealing with it, it's something that, like the clip you just saw, you have to take it back right down to the children, to the toddlers. That's the level that you have to deal with it. And you have to change the way these people see the world and the way they educate their kids about the world.
Well, and I'm curious about, Wayne, are you careful here to point out that Muslim itself is not a extreme radical religion? Do you carefully differentiate radical extreme Islam from mainstream Islam?
Right. That's actually, thank you for bringing that up, because, you know, radical Islam has literally taken what mainstream Islam and turned it on its head and used it as a weapon. And, you know, it doesn't do the Islamic world a service, you know, what these people are doing. And we, in the film, are very, very careful to differentiate between the two.
Hey, Nani, it's Sean Hannity here. Your father had a fascinating life. He headed the Egyptian military in Gaza and the Sinai when Gaza was under Egyptian control in the 50s. He was killed in 1956 in jihad against Israel.
That's correct. And the cycle of is still going on. The Fida'iyin of yesterday are now becoming Hezbollah and all of these terror groups. And enough is enough. We moderate Arab voices, and you'll see in the movie several of us speaking against terrorism. The Ayatollahs and the sheikhs, the hateful self-anointed sheikhs who are condemning the Middle East to a permanent state of war. Mm-hmm. This condition has to end.
Well, I guess if we're going to use an analogy, Nani, we looked at, for example, you could look at Hitler in his writing. You could look at Hitler in his actions. Hitler was battling against civilization. We see the exact same thing happening here. I mean, you're showing real images from real Arab television, and it is a real insider's view. You see the children, their indoctrination, their hatred of the West. It's like we are sitting, we've been lulled into a sleep when it's the rise of Nazism just before our eyes. Isn't there a similarity here?
Very much so. And I'm very happy that at least the film Obsession is showing that angle, because unfortunately the media doesn't get the translations of Arab television. What's happening in mosques, the hate speech and the cursing of Jews and non-Muslims and Christians, we have to stand up to our religion and take it back from these hateful people.
You know, so I'm glad to hear you say that, because the people that are being killed the most, it seems right now, are Muslims, are being killed by these Islamic fascists. Let me go to Wayne, because I want to talk specifically about the movie. Wayne, you have image after image, example after example. It is shocking beyond belief of just how radical and how extensive and how deep this enemy is in this battle against the West. Why is everybody seem to be asleep? Why is there not a world call to arms against this?
Well, first of all, I'm afraid to say that we haven't even shown a fraction of the footage that we actually have. And to tell the truth, we haven't even shown the most radical of the footage, because some of the stuff is just a little bit too hectic.
But you need to show that. Why not?
You know, in the context of the film and in the context of the thesis of the film, We needed to present things that were in line with the exact thesis of the film that we were trying to present. But still, what we show is astoundingly shocking, as you pointed out. And why hasn't the media, the most of the mainstream media, picked up on this? First of all, because this information is behind this Arabic language barrier. That's first of all. And second of all, I don't think they really want to look there, because if you shine a light into those dark corners, it may be too frightening.
Right, Wayne,
you know, what you find there.
We thank you very much, Wayne. Nani, we thank you as well for coming on tonight.
Thank you very
coming
much.
Up, thank you.
Well, you know, I was wondering when I was listening to that, because the big question at the end is, why is everyone asleep on this, and why isn't the mainstream media covering all of this, the radical Islam, the stuff that's coming out of Arab television? The film, apparently, at least from what they were showing, and they showed a lot of, it didn't work well for radio, they showed a lot of things that were subtitled into English. And it's amazing, little school children, little girls, just kind of standing there in the classroom talking about chopping off George Bush's head. This is what I want. What do you want for Christmas? Kind of a thing. Oh, I want to see America in flames with a smile on her face. And apparently this is the, and then pictures of imams waving swords, literally waving swords over their head in the mosque, calling for the death of the infidel, calling for the death of Americans. All right. It'll scare the willy out of you. But is the problem only radical Islam, or is the problem, is Sean Hannity asleep on this one too? Because he wants to make the distinction between the peace-loving Islamic world. They're certainly peace-loving Muslims. But the peace-loving Islamic world, and then this minority of radical Islam. I don't know, until proven otherwise, I still go with Dr. Montgomery's theory on this one. That where Islam holds political sway and holds the political majority, you see a different face of Islam. What we call radical Islam, and where it sits in the political minority, by and large, generally speaking, you see Islam as a quietistic, peace-loving organization. It all depends on whether they're in the majority or the minority. I have yet to hear anyone, even someone on Fox News, say that. It's Audio Open Lines. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's Pat in DeSoto. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I just am very impressed with Paul because he said, I'm determined to know nothing but Christ crucified, and he considered everything else dung. And Mel Gibson's not in my church, so I'm not that interested in him. He's in the church that excommunicated Luther. Thank you.
All right, Pat. Well, I still regard Gibson as a fellow Christian. I do not know what his particular beliefs are. At least according to the news, he is in a branch of a more conservative kind of old right Latin Mass Roman Catholicism. I think our previous caller, Charlie, was right. As far as we can tell, he is a devout Roman Catholic. And Pat, I don't think that's any reason to simply just disregard him. What he's done is actually not that remarkable. It's certainly wrong, but it's not that remarkable for what happens among celebrities from time to time in Hollywood. What makes it remarkable is, in fact, that he is a devout Roman Catholic. If he were an atheist, do you think there would be as much news about a drunken drive, an arrest, and an anti-Semitic tirade? Probably not. The fact that he is a professed Christian is what makes it a story. Well, finally here on Audio Open Lines, Tony Blair is pressing for more international embryonic stem cell cooperation. He's here in the U.S. doing it as well. This is a story from CNN.
There are few objections to stem cell research in the United Kingdom. Despite ethical concerns in the United States, voiced by President George W. Bush, British Prime Minister Tony Blair has broken with his friend on this issue. London is investing nearly $200 million over the next 2 years and pledges to make Britain the world's premier stem cell research center, while small British biotechs are raising private funding for clinical trials.
We're probably one of the world's leaders in this field. And I think what the Prime Minister is doing is taking that message to California and showing them that you can do stem cell research, which many people view as being very contentious, but you can do that in a tightly regulated fashion and yet in an environment that's very scientifically permissive.
Britain is finding increased competition from the rest of Europe. The EU has agreed to continue funding research of embryonic stem cells if it does not lead to the death of an embryo. And though U.S. federal research funding is cut off in this area, U.S. states are promising money. California is using its considerable high-tech know-how and budget to research potential treatment breakthroughs for people with illnesses from Alzheimer's to diabetes. Though its pledge to use taxpayers' money has landed the state in court. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger says the state's biotech companies cannot fall behind.
I'm 100% committed to advancing stem cell research in California and to the promise that it holds for millions of our citizens who suffer from chronic diseases.
Mr. Blair will have to convince American executives the UK will not suffer a backlash using embryonic cells, as its biotech sector has from animal rights activists, as has its farmers who plant genetically modified crops created by big American firms. Britain also hopes to lure American scientists to its stem cell labs, while the U.S. continues to debate the morality issues. Jim Bolden, CNN, London.
Now, I think it's a telling ending to that story. You know, science moves forward, except where people debate the morality issue on embryonic stem cell research. There are those who will say, fine, have your objections, but stop debating the morality of this. Let's just get on with the research. The whole point of the debate is whether this is right or wrong. Embryonic stem cell research. Bottom line, adult stem cell research, right, good, no one dies. Embryonic stem cell research, wrong, bad. In each and every case, the embryo does die. Now, the big question here, of course, is public funding, whether it's in Great Britain or the U.S. And that's the only debate that's taking place politically right now. Not morally, but politically, is whether or not taxpayer dollars, either at the state level or at the federal level, should be used to fund human cloning for biomedical research or the destruction of embryos for research purposes. That's the only debate. Why are we debating public funding? Well, Wesley Smith has pointed it out 100 times if he's pointed it out once. We're debating public funding because there's not a lot of private funding for embryonic stem cell research. And there's a reason for that. It hasn't proved fruitful yet, but don't let anyone get away with telling you or saying that Christians oppose stem cell research. We don't. We just oppose the destruction of human embryos to do that research. We'll be right back with Suzanne Venker or Wendy Wright.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.